Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the full moon of free speech. And when the moon is full, the werewolves come out. And the werewolves engage in infighting. That's what happens. That's what they do during full moons. The werewolves come out and they infight. But not on this show. This is part two of the Jeremy and Patrick show. So go to RBN and at Mooncakes. Yeah. 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. 1-800-724-2727. Those are the places to send fundage. Okay, Jeremy, welcome back to part two of the show.
Great to be back. You broke up just a bit. I got the gist of the donation info. Oh. Just maybe check your connect.
Okay.
But,
Okay. Well, okay. Well, we'll do the best we can do.
Yeah.
All right. So where do we want to go from here?
Well, we covered the Russian stuff pretty good last night with Prigozhin. And I had this article from WKNS. It's time to rethink Rudy Giuliani and his claim to discover RICO. Now, just to sort of summarize the article, it's sort of a gotcha piece on Giuliani as it features his mugshot here at the Fulton County Sheriff's Office. And he's got some weird face. Fortunately, his hair dye is not running down his face like it was when he was contesting the elections back in 21. But the gist of the piece is basically Giuliani claimed that he pushed the RICO in the Southern District of New York, and he was sort of famous for pushing that against mafia types and gangster types, you know, being able to charge these individuals with multiple crimes, drain their assets, and come after them. But really, it was done in the 70s. It was done in the 70s by prosecutors before Giuliani. And so the gist of the article is they're saying, well, isn't it ironic that Giuliani, who's claiming to be this whole guy that, you know, made it popular to use RICO statutes to go after organized crime, that he is now being prosecuted under RICO. That's the gist of the article.
Well, okay. It's ironic. So Giuliani, I believe he was mayor of New York from 2009 to 2000. From 1999 to 2007. I think he was two terms, and I think those were the years. And before becoming mayor of New York, he was a prosecutor. What was he? District attorney, or I'm not sure what his title was.
Yeah, he was federal prosecutor in New York in the 1980s. And okay. he became famous, you know, for going after corrupt organizations targeting mafia families in the U.S.
Okay. And, you know, RICO laws, what does RICO even stand for?
So, let's see. It's right here in the article, and I just went right past it. Racketeering law, Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. And if I understand it correctly from reading the content of the article and looking it up, they're able to charge these crime families on multiple charges going across state lines. So the FBI would be involved, you know, in bringing evidence against said crime families. And this was really made, this was really pushed in the early 70s, prosecutors in the early 70s doing this before Giuliani, you know, got his claim to fame in the 80s.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't really care whether he was claiming to be an originator of something he wasn't or not. As far as the irony goes, I don't even care about the irony, but it's just so third world that that Trump and his associates are being prosecuted over what amounts to basically fake crimes. You know, just this petty made up stuff that may in some cases may technically be violations. In other cases, it's like the RICO stuff. I mean, why is it RICO? Because he said on he said on Twitter, watch certain shows, and that's like corrupt influence. Watch this show on the election fraud on Fox News and One America News, because I think that's what's happening. Yeah. So that is so third world. But then one other aspect of this is something maybe we ought to discuss. And so you got Rudy Giuliani, and what is he, 81 years old now? I guess he's in reasonably good health for an octogenarian, but he's old. He's somebody who has, on the one hand, he does have some genuine accomplishments, because in the 80s and 90s, New York was really, was overrun with crime. The 80s, it was having, I guess, I think like 87, 88, you were having just thousands of murders per year. It was like 2,500 murders per year, something like that, which comes out to like 8 a day. So it was really crime infested. And by the time he had been mayor for a few years, it was way, way safer. So he's a Republican getting elected mayor of the biggest Democrat city in the country, right? So he has some actual genuine accomplishments. You know, on the other hand, he ran for president, and it was all 9/11, and he's all for Israel and all this stuff. And of course, now he's 80 years old. He doesn't have much of a future. And so, he's being thoroughly attacked by the Jewish power that has been at war with Donald Trump. He's been caught up in this. Is he ever going to, I mean, is he going to be plugging Israel, shilling for Israel and the Jews until he's lowered into his grave? I mean, what is the point of somebody like Giuliani, who in his old age is being thoroughly attacked and abused over this bogus nonsense, this bullhonk by Jewish power? Who? And he's an Italian. Come on, he's an Italian from New York. He knows what's going on. Why can't he come out and say something? That's what's probably most remarkable.
Yeah, to address your comments, yes, Giuliani will be lowered into his grave, and his headstone will read, he was the great mayor of New York. He fostered RICO statutes in the 80s to go against organized crime, and he shilled for the Jews vehemently. That is what's going to be on his headstone. And so, I mean, before the RICO Act of 1970, before it was on the books, it was considered, you know, unfair, prejudicial for prosecutors to say that a defendant was a member of mafia or some sort of criminal organization. So I guess RICO's purpose was proving that there is an association with a larger criminal activity, rather than focusing on the individual act, you know, the crime of the individual, him or herself, right? And so RICO had its purpose for going after mafia and organized crime, truly, but for them to use it in a political matter, which is what you're pointing out, is third world, is banana republic. And also, to answer your question, which you know the answer to already, why they're doing it is it's an attack on white America. I mean, this whole thing of pushing back on the election fraud and Donald Trump's, election and candidacy in his presidency, they're attacking that as an attack on white people. This is telling white people, look, don't, you know, you sent in what you thought was an outsider to try to overturn the system. Don't ever do this again, because this is what's going to happen. And this is what's happening to January 6th protesters. Now it's happening to Trump and Giuliani and the other 19 individuals who are being politically prosecuted, because that's what that is, isn't it? It's political prosecution of political enemies. And they're saying, don't ever do this again. And we're going to come down on you when you do. So, yeah, that's the deal.
And, you know, where if there are a lot of possible repercussions from this. And one possible repercussion, if this type of stuff goes forward, if they have trials in Florida and trials in New York and trials in Washington, D.C., with local populations serving as jurors, you wind up getting convictions. And, I mean, hopefully it would eventually get overturned by the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court up until now has shown no interest in getting involved in the 2020 election in any way. And so if any one of these winds up, successfully imprisoning these people, now you've got this precedent of any prosecutor in or judge in anywhere in the United States just basically overthrowing the American government. America will become completely ungovernable if county prosecutors and district attorneys can imprison leaders of the federal government. You can't have a country like that. So it's an insane proposition.
They're willing to take that insane step in the same way that Newman and Blinken and the like are willing to take these insane measures against Russia and this Ukraine war. You know, we mentioned in the show last night, they're being very reckless with no off-ramp. And that's sort of what's happening here. And another message they're sending out is do not question the elections. So Trump being, a supposed outsider, he violated the golden rule of questioning the quote sacred elections of democracy, unquote. No one else has done that. You know, you go back to 2000 in the Bush-Gore, right? And Gore, finally acquiesced. Now, Hillary Clinton kicked up a fuss. All right, go ahead.
Well, I mean, the Gore thing is kind of funny because they did fight it. They did fight it, but that wasn't over fraud. That was over a genuinely close election where technical interpretations of paper ballots, if these are ballots where you're punching chads out of, pre-perforated chads out of a piece of paper, and to what extent, how many edges of the chad need to be detached in order for it to be a valid vote. So it's just a question of technicalities rather than a question of fraud. But Gore, who was the person who was in Mike Pence's shoes in on January 6, 2001? Is Al Gore. And, Al Gore wound up certifying his own election lost. Just as Richard Nixon certified his own election loss in 1960, where there actually was fraud.
And Biden certified Trump amidst all of the Russian hoax, Russian interference. I mean, there was some kickback. There was a kicking up a fuss a little bit. Clinton kicked up a fuss in 2016. But no one called out total election fraud like what was done in 2020 and 2021. And I'll give credit to Mike Sledge over on American National Radio for pointing this out, that is the sacred cow that you do not slaughter. You do not tip this cow for all you country folk that go cow tipping. You do not question the election to this extent. And that's why they're coming down on Trump and all of these 19 people is because they did the unthinkable. They did what you're not supposed to do, is call the entire election process a fraud. Rather than just nitpick technicalities, you see? And that's why they're willing to go so far with this and risk everything to make an example of these people. Yes, to punish white America, but also to punish these individual politicians and lawyers to say never, never do this again. Don't ever do it again. And they're hoping to, that charges stick on the state level in Georgia, right? Because those can't be pardoned federally, right? Isn't that part of the play here?
Yeah, I don't know if is the president able to make pardons of violations of state laws. The president is able to make pardons regarding federal officials engaged in federal business. Pretty sure. But, you know, I don't know about that interpretation of this, because you've had people vehemently question election results. So think of Stacey Abrams. And you know, there's actually some irony in so many of the people who are involved in the media and to an extent in the legal profession who are saying how Trump deserves to be imprisoned for this, who were the exact same people who were saying that the Georgia gubernatorial election in, what was it, 2018, that it was fraudulent and that Stacey Abrams won. I think you've had this disputed election. In the United States, the election of 1876 wasn't settled on January 6th. It wasn't settled until, I think, March 3rd, March 2nd or 3rd, between Tilden and Hayes. I think this has to do more with Trump than the sacredness of election counts. You know, you could say, like, maybe in recent times, for a Republican to question it is unacceptable. But, you know, there's Stacey Abrams. She never conceded. And in Arizona, they're not going after Carrie Lake. I mean, she's complaining. They're not going after Carrie Lake. I think they're going after Trump because Trump is unpredictable. I know that a lot of people on RBN don't look at him as a savior, and I'm not saying they should look at him as a savior, but I think he is unpredictable. He is, from the point of view of Jewish power, he is a loose cannon, and they don't want him. He potentially could be very vengeful. You know, he's got an axe to grind. Maybe he would be like a Giuliani and be lowered into his grave with the same epithet that you just described for Giuliani. Maybe he would, or maybe he would be vengeful and go after a lot of these people. It's hard to say, but I think that traditionally, I think that in order for elections to function, people have to be able to complain. People have to say, I think there was fraud. If
to a point,
then the elections are meaningless.
To a point, yeah. I guess the system would point out, well, this culminated in January 6th, you know, alleged the uprising, the insurrection, the alleged insurrection, which it wasn't. But more importantly than that, what you're hitting on, and you're making good points, is that Trump represented white America's backlash. That's what he represents. And so that can never happen again.
Yeah.
So that I think that probably is the ultimate reason why they're coming down like this and willing to risk everything and, go all of these things that you say they're risking. They're willing to do that to make an example of white America rising up against the Jewish dominated system, even though Trump would never put it in those words.
That's correct. And I think that's what Trump represents in the eyes of the Jews, the Jewish power structure. Let me say it like that, the Jewish power structure and their allies, that's what Trump represents. He represents the white backlash. And he has for a long time. When, let's see, who was doing the Daily Show when Trump got elected? Was it still Jon Stewart, or was it Noah, whatever his name, the Bushman from South Africa?
I can look it up. Go ahead and make your point.
I can't remember which it was. But they were referring to that as white lash.
Don Lemon also.
Don Lemon was a...
To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Go ahead and make your point.
But they were referring to that as white lash.
Don Lamond also.
Don Lamond, were they talking about white lash? Because there's backlash, and then somebody coined the term black lash in regards to something. I don't know if it was Obama or whatever. And then white lash is a response to backlash. But they were talking about Trump's initial election in real time as white lash. And so it's a white backlash. And that's what he's always represented in their eyes. Now, obviously, he was a disappointment to people who were hoping that he would represent a white backlash, which he seemed to be poised to do, but didn't really follow through to the extent that a lot of people wanted him to.
It was a white backlash. I mean, it took a form that we're not, maybe nobody thought was ideal, but it was.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a vehicle that isn't ideal, but honestly, what other vehicle was there, right? I mean, I'm speaking from personal experience. If you've just robbed the bank and you run outside, you'd like a Ferrari, but if the only thing there is a Mazda hatchback or something, that's what you're going to get in. You're just going to get into it. VW Beetle, that's what you'll get into.
By the way, Jonathan Liebowitz, hosted Daily Show 99 to 2015. So Trevor Noah was on it 2015 to 2022.
Yeah, so it was probably Trevor Noah. Or it could have been the guy who took over the Colbert Report. And I'm not sure when Colbert went to CBS, but he was doing the Colbert Report. And then there was some guy, Whit. What was his last name? I think his name was Whitmore or something. Jason Whitmore or something like that. I don't know what his name was. He was a comedian. He wasn't too awful, but he wasn't that great either. And maybe he'd coined it. I can't remember. Well, anyway.
Yeah, so, takeaway. I mean, and I remember when Trump got elected, I remember January 2017, watching the local news, like WPSD out of Paducah, Kentucky. All of the news anchors had this grim, dark look on their faces. It was very odd. Whether it be local news or international news, you know, your CNN and MSNBCs. And there's this dark look on their faces, like we were in dark times. And there was just this feeling of dread that the news put out there, that the anchors put out there. I'd never seen anything like it in my life, honestly. You know, responding to, you know, basically their talking point was a fascist has taken over America. You know, white supremacy has taken over America. That was sort of the talking point on all of the news in 2017.
You know, I was there on January 20th, 2017, on Inauguration Day. I saw Trump's inauguration. I heard his speech. And it was a good speech. It was a peaceful speech, and it wasn't a divisive speech, not in the least. And if you look at Trump between Election Day and Inauguration Day, I have big problems with the people he included in his cabinet. But the people that he brought into the administration in the context of the American elite, these were not divisive people. These were mainstream people. These were mainstream Republicans, and mainstream Republicans and mainstream Democrats are, I mean, it's kind of the uniparty. He wasn't bringing in hardly anybody from outside the mainstream. Even if these were like the second and third tier people, they were from the mainstream. They weren't like first tier people. But, you know, it wasn't divisive. Yet on Inauguration Day, you had riots. You had Antifa type of riots in Washington attacking the pro-Trump people who had come to watch the inaugural. You had a limousine set on fire. You had all this stuff. Lauren Southern, if she was a thing back then, she was attacked in Washington, D.C. You had these thugs, Antifa or Black Lives, actually more Black Lives Matter, maybe. They were taking over intersections in downtown Washington, D.C. and not letting people go through unless they said they supported Hillary. It was like all this weird stuff. And then the very next day, on January 21st, you had a massive pussy hat march with, the pussy hats.
And speaking. Okay.
He never, and it was probably the next day that, I think it was the next day that the FBI went and interviewed General Flynn. So yes. He was not given even a day. And on that first day, he did take time out of from dancing with his lovely wife to fire Victoria Nuland, who otherwise would have been able to stick around for a few weeks and cause trouble.
Talking about that inaugural speech, though, it was divisive in the sense that
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. Or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Dancing with his lovely wife, Fire Victoria Nuland, who otherwise would have been able to stick around for a few weeks and cause trouble.
Talking about that inaugural speech, though, it was divisive in the sense that I think it put a divide between the American people and the elites that have been in power. If I remember right, that's sort of the gist of the speech. Yeah. You know, taking America back from the elites was sort of the keynote in it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't really partisan so much, but it was populist.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what they hate. They hate populism. Populism is, you know, leads to National Socialist Germany, which leads to the Holocaust and all of that. So, yeah, you can see definitely the system violently reacting to Trump's speech and his presidency. Yeah. So we've got other stuff here. Did you have more on this Giuliani thing?
No. But to reiterate my point, what does Giuliani at this point have to lose by being a little bit honest?
You never know. What does his children or his heirs have to lose? I mean, maybe that's the question. Maybe that's what he's thinking about. Who knows?
Maybe.
What do these people think? You know, that same article showed pictures of Giuliani and then-Senator Clinton touring 9/11 rubble and how he was you know, mayor of New York, and that article has the headline over that picture, how the, you know, America's mayor has fallen. It's this real dark, little dark thing. Talking about Giuliani falling from graces, or
yeah.
That's the takeaway. This is a crackdown on you know, white people pushing back against the system, and these particular 19 defendants just happen to be the representative of white pushback, whether they want to be or not.
Yeah.
So
okay.
We got a lot of stuff here. I don't know what you want to get into. My prep phone is about to die, so I wanted to highlight this thing, saving the whales in Hawaii. Did you happen to catch this one?
I've heard a bit about it.
College Fix. So College Fix is the website. Hawaii indigenous lecturer explains the racism of environmentalists saving sea life. So this is a brown guy. Lecturing the University of Hawaii at Manoa. Probably didn't say that right.
Manoa. University of Hawaii, Manoa. I've been there many times.
His whole thing is white people advocating for saving the whales are neglecting brown children who are starving in Hawaii who could eat that meat. So the Greenpeace environmentalist Save the Whale movement is just another form of white supremacy. That was the basics of it. And so you're a big, you know, you were a big environmentalist back in the day and still are. You know, you talk about climate change. I thought maybe you might have some insights into this, especially as a person who lived on Hawaii for a while.
Yeah.
But what's the deal with the whales there? Are indigenous people starving because of Greenpeace? And is this white supremacy?
Well, okay. Indigenous people aren't starving. Indigenous people are obese. I mean, the Hawaiians have a massive obesity problem. That doesn't mean they're not impoverished or whatever, but there's massive obesity in amongst Hawaiians. Lahaina, the city that burned, the town that burned, is not particularly large. That was the whaling capital, the whaling center of Hawaii. And Moby Dick, written by Herman Melville. Herman Melville had spent time in Hawaii. This is how he learned about the whaling industry. So you had that. But the indigenous Hawaiians were never whalers. Now, a lot of what the guy says is correct. The environmentalist movement has always been white. It's been white. And, you know, you do get environmentalist movements in Japan or other places, but after the examples of what has happened in white countries, whites have, like, you go to China and, like, the Chinese are just, when I was in China, they just throw stuff out the window. You'd be on trains and you look out the window of trains and it was just nonstop trash dump because everybody just threw the stuff out the window. Hong Kong, people just throw stuff out the window in high-rise buildings. I mean, and the alleys would be full of stuff. So, yeah, environmentalism is a white thing. Saving whales is a white thing. Greenpeace is a white organization. Does that make it bad? It's white. Does that make it bad?
One of the things this lecturer, this brown guy, I mean, who even knows what his origins are? He's probably not even Hawaiian.
What's his last name?
Oh, man, my prep phone died. Let me get back to his last name, but I wanted to make a point. What he was saying, that look, all these white whalers from like the 19th century and, you know, coming into Hawaii and taking advantage of the whales are now, you know, proponents, these white people are proponents of saving the whales at the expense of brown people. And they're using Hawaii as just their tourist area. That's basically all it's good for, is tourism for white people. And now it's ironic. He's saying that these descendants of white whalers are now advocating to save the whales and in their white supremacy and totally neglecting brown children starving to death. That was another thing he was bringing up in the article. And I can look at his last name unless you got it.
I see it. No, I see it now. So his middle name is a Hawaiian name. So Bruce Kaimi Watson. So, and you look at him, and he's probably mostly white, but has some Hawaiian ancestry. That's what I would assume. And there are very few pure Hawaiians. There are very few. You do see plenty of pure Samoans and pure Tongans on Hawaii. They're Polynesians. They're very similar. But there aren't that many pure Hawaiians. There are some, but not too many. The Hawaiians are much more mixed. But at any rate, I mean, there's some truth to some of the things he says. The whales were, or some whales in particular, like the right whale and the humpback whale, they were hunted into near extinction by whites, by Europeans, by Americans in the 17 and in particular the 1800s. And they were hunted largely for oil because there's a lot of oil in their heads. And you could get 50 barrels of oil from a single whale. And, you know, the meat was eaten to an extent, but it was more for the oil, which was used for lubrication. It was used in industry. It was used in lamp lighting, you know, for things like that. That's what the whaling was about. Now, you've had whaling in, you know, Greenland, Iceland for food. The Japanese in the 20th century were whaling for food. I don't know how much they were whaling before that, maybe to an extent. But the thing is, and then Hawaii is a very rich place, and indigenous Hawaiians, to an extent, share in that. But, of course, their islands have been overrun by whites and by even more so by Asians. So, I mean, the Hawaiians have certain gripes, but, you know, the tourist industry is huge. There's a little bit of whale watching in that industry. You can go out and watch go out on a boat and try to find the humpback whale to look at it, right? So that's a small part of their tourism industry. Most of it is sandy beaches and nice sun and moderate weather. There's, you know, the Hawaiians can have gripes because they had their islands taken from them, and now they're, it's, you know, people from Asia and mainland America that run it, and the Hawaiians are marginalized.
But yeah, that was all Spanish-American War.
Right. That's right. It was taken over in the context of the Spanish-American War, even though it wasn't a Spanish colony, but it was largely because Philippines were taken in the Spanish-American War, and Hawaii is a good way station on the way to the Philippines.
Well, I would like to quote Mr. Spock in Star Trek IV, the movie. And he said, to hunt a species to extinction is not logical. To which Captain Kirk replied, whoever said the human race was logical?
Okay.
Did you catch? Let's delve into that cultural reference. Did you catch Star Trek IV? That's probably the best one of all the Star Trek movies, quite honestly. I'm not a Trekkie. I just happened to be a kid back then. Okay.
So it's William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy still, right?
Yeah, so, you know, after the... So I'm a kid in the 80s, right? And we have three channels in the early 80s. And on Saturdays, they would play the 1960s Star Trek reruns, which I thought were just completely entertaining. I mean, my cousins and I loved it.
Uh-huh.
And so then, you know, in what, like the late 70s, you had the first Star Trek movie with all the original cast from the 60s television show. You know, you had a series of Star Trek movies. The first one that I ever saw in the theater, I think it's the first one I ever saw, period, was Star Trek IV. And in that movie, you know, in Star Trek's time, which was like 300 years in the future, this alien came to Earth and it wanted to hear the song of the whale, or it was going to destroy Earth. It was this big alien ship. But the whales had been hunted to extinction, so Captain Kirk and the gang all went back in time. They figured out how to do that by going around the sun somehow. And they went back to beam a whale from the 1980s America onto the ship and bring it into the future. So that... I think it was probably one of the most entertaining movies that was ever made of Star Trek, period, of all Star Trek.
I have no recollection of that. Maybe the only Star Trek movie I saw was the one where Spock died at the end. But,
okay, so that was number three. So he was brought back. No, he died in number two. That was Wrath of Khan. He died in number two. Number three, he was brought back. And I don't want to get into the details of how. But the point is that, you know, the Star Trek people were roaming around 1980s California. I think it was Los Angeles, and looking for this whale. And so they went to a, you know, a big aquarium where they keep this particular whale. And Spock dove down there and did a mind meld with it. Anyway, that's where the – I just thought it was a good quote where Spock said, to hunt a species to extinction is illogical.
Hey, well, you know what I was expecting Kirk to say?
What?
I didn't see the movie, but it's delicious. That's what I was expecting to say. I mean, that would go very well with his character, if you remember. I mean, the William Shatner's Captain Kirk, if it was at the end of the show. If it was at the end of the show where they're joking around the lighthearted, yeah, he would have said that. In the middle of the show, yeah, or towards the beginning of the show, whoever said humans were logical, that maybe that makes more sense.
And then Bones would have said, "Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a marine biologist."
Yeah, and Scotty would say, "Captain, the engines can't take it any longer.
We can't lift off with this whale, Captain. She's going to go down. We can't hold it any longer."
Yeah, and then Sulu would say, "Hey, did you check out that guy in the tight shorts?" That's probably what it's.
Chekhov would say, "You know, Vladimir Putin was a pretty successful figure in the 21st century. I'm just saying."
Just saying. And he rounded up the gays. No, he didn't round up the gays, but he clamped down on the gays.
Well, that was an entertaining cultural reference to do an aside on. I thought that was fun.
That was fun. Oh, my God. So we still got we got 5 minutes left, and we've talked about very important, amazing things. Do you have anything else to raise, or should I raise something?
Well, meanwhile, in L.A., the people of brown skin color, and that has nothing to do with their behavior, by the way. I mean, they just happen to be maybe victims of their environment. I don't know. It has nothing to do with DNA or, you know, group behavior. They're raiding Macy's to the point where Macy's is having to close their doors. But because, you know, it's not a felony if it's under, like, what, $900? This is becoming rampant, and this is on the New York Post. Mob of masked thieves clear out shelves at L.A. Macy's as stunned shoppers look on. So now the police are having to do, like, a task force to address these roving gangs of people who happen to just have really good tans. Taking out all this merchandise. So much merchandise that they're dropping it on the way out of the store. They're just dropping, like, expensive items out of their bags. They have so much. How can this be sustainable? You know, these big cities are going to basically collapse if this decadence, this lawlessness is not addressed. And it doesn't seem like it's going to be addressed anytime soon.
No, it's not. So, I mean, you have this whole liberal, Democrat, progressive meme of blacks as underserved populations. They're underserved. That's one of the words they use. Systemic racism. Why is it systemic racism? Because in black neighborhoods, so many black neighborhoods don't have supermarkets. They don't have drug stores. They don't have bank branches. Well, why don't they? Because you can't turn a profit with all the shoplifting. I mean, this and burglary. This is why they don't have them. They used to have them, but they got shut down because of crime. And now what you're you know, this is long established. And now what you're getting is blacks going into white areas, and they're not going to the supermarkets. If they're going to go to all the trouble to go into what was this, Rodeo Valley or something, some nice place, some nice suburb of Los Angeles. If they're going to go to all that trouble, they're not going to go into a Walgreens and steal, what do they steal from Walgreens? I don't know what they steal, but they're not going to go steal cigarettes from Walgreens. So they go into Bloomingdale's or Macy's or the Apple store or some jewelry shop and steal really high-end goods. Well, now these same, the patrons of these stores, wealthy liberals with Black Lives Matter signs in their front lawns. Now they're going to be underserved. There will be underserved populations because their Macy's have been shut down. There's a lot of irony there.
Well, I mean, this is true reparations, Patrick. I mean, get on board, man. It's on. These Bloomingdale's and Macy's, these represent the apex of white civilization and culture, selling expensive items to yuppies. And the blacks deserve it. This is what they deserve. This is what they need to compensate for colonialism and slavery. And they've been given the green light by being told they're not going to be prosecuted.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
And the blacks deserve it. This is what they deserve. This is what they need to compensate for colonialism and slavery. And they've been given the green light by being told they're not going to be prosecuted for shoplifting. So what do you expect them to do? You talk about group behavior. I mean, did we expect anything else?
So here's one analogy. There's lots of analogies you could use. But I remember as a kid going to the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C., Smithsonian Museum of Science and Technology. and you walk in the front door, and there's this giant pendulum that's suspended from a ceiling 3 or 4 stories above, and it's going back and forth very slowly. And because the earth below it is rotating, the pendulum, it's going back and forth, but each time it's moving over just a tiny bit. And they had something like dominoes that were set up, and such that every 10 or 15 minutes, one of the dominoes gets knocked over by the little spike at the bottom of the pendulum. And so it's a little, you know, this was before they had video games, so we had nothing better to do than to stand and watch this pendulum go back and forth, and then, and waiting for it, it's getting closer, and it's getting closer, and then it's like just brushing by that little domino, and it jiggles a little bit, and you know, 1 or 2 or 3 more swings, and that domino is going to get knocked over. And that's what it's like looking at society. Because it's just on the verge. And maybe it's going to be 1 more swing, maybe it's going to be 3 or 4 swings, but you know it's just going to get knocked over. And the amazing thing is that there's so many people who are in denial about it. And the other amazing thing is there's so many people outside the country who have no idea that America is like just on the brink of being a domino knocked over. That's what I'd say.
Is it engineered? So that's question one. Is it engineered? And then what will be the response when these cities collapse? Because, I mean, the Macy's is going to have to close eventually, just lock their doors. I mean, it's not sustainable to keep a business open like this. What about these big cities? Do they have plans, the Jewish-dominated elite, for these cities? I think about smart cities. I think about rebuilding and restructuring cities in the name of, you know, sustainability. Stopping crime or curtailing crime, and you know that would be, they come in with the answer, well, let's rebuild these cities, let's put them in such a configuration that they are sustainable. You know, what do you think about that?
Okay, so I think the main goal here is not to collapse society. The main goal is to eliminate whites as a cohesive group capable of challenging the Jewish-dominated power structure. And the side effect is collapsing the economy, collapsing society. And there are those who want to capitalize off of that collapse with one kind of scheme or another. But the main focus is to destroy whites as a possible rival to the power, the Jewish power structure. At any rate, we're out of time, but I think this has been a lot of fun.
Well, thanks, Patrick. I mean, it was fun, and I hope you stay classy. I know it's a struggle.
It's a struggle, but maybe I'm getting the hang of it. I don't know. We'll see. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQ, RS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What? Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, you know. How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You can't! can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle